This is Inside Open Wheel with your host, Jeremy Scott.
From the Trackon Multimedia Studios just southwest of Chicago, this is Inside Open Wheel. Hello, everybody. Jeremy Scott here with you. We have a lot of news to get to. Driver analyst Charlie Ante joins me here in the studio. We'll chat with him in a little bit. We're going to have Connor Daly in. He is the IndyCar driver who's going to be splitting his time between Ed Carpenter Racing and Carlin Racing this year. We're going to talk about that, his iRacing antics, and why you need to be watching his Twitch stream. Also joining us, we're going to be doing something different this month of May. Now, we know that this isn't a typical month of May where we have action at the track almost every day, but regardless, I'm still going to treat it as a normal month. So therefore, Field of 33 blogs, Paul Dalby will be joining us each week. We're going to be talking about a lot of different topics. This week's topic, we're going to be talking about strange rookies, and we'll explain that in just a little bit. As always, if you have any questions for us, you can find us on Facebook on the Inside Open Wheel page, also on Twitter at Inside Open Wheel. Right now, we get into the news, a very busy news week once again. Charlie Ante joins us, our driver analyst. And Charlie, this just came through the pipelines about 5 minutes before recording. NHRA is, they announced about 5 days ago that they were going to be restarting their season in June at the Gator Nationals. There's two things wrong with that. One of them is it's hot as you know what down there in Central Florida in June. But also, obviously, we're still seeing cases with COVID-19 on the rise in nationally, period. But NHRA decided that discretion was a better part of valor, and it sounds like they're going to be doing 16 races in 16 weeks. How that's going to play out, I don't even know, but that just sounds like a grueling stretch, worse than the Hell Tour that the dirt track guys have.
Yeah, I don't know what the logistics are for those guys, but I mean, NASCAR does back-to-back races for pretty much their entire season, right? They get like a few weeks off, but not many.
Yeah, but at the same time, you know, NHRA has, you know, at least four professional divisions, maybe five on some weekends. And it's like, you know, sports cars where they've got to take down an awning, put it back up. NASCAR can just go from, you know, track to track, pull their car out and just put it right in the garage.
Yeah, that's true. That's, like I said, I'm not super familiar with the logistics of it. I don't think I can say anything intelligent about it.
But
we're much more intelligent than that anyways.
Yeah, so this could be interesting to see what happens. I'm wondering if they're going to do a NASCAR like schedule where they run the first, you know, couple, two, three races at one track. You know, you've several possibilities. First of all, you can send them out to Las Vegas or Charlotte. Both of those have four lanes per se, so you could run, you know, one weekend with two lanes and one weekend with four lanes. Also, a lot of teams are still based in the Indianapolis area, so you have I believe it's O'Reilly Raceway Park still. I'm sorry, it's Lucas Oil Raceway, and then you can go over to Chicagoland up here to Route 66 Raceway, do a couple races. The possibilities are endless, but I think in the next couple weeks we're going to see what happens. But what I'm thinking is, this does not bode too well for IndyCar if they want to get the season started before the month of August when the 500 is supposed to be. I've been saying this off the record, and I'm going to come out and say this now. The only race on the schedule is going to be the 500. It's going to be a winner-take-all. Whoever wins takes a BorgWarner trophy, and they also take the championship title, and that's it.
Yeah, well, I guess, I mean, like we said last time I was on, all of this stuff is tentative. Nobody knows what's going to happen in 2 weeks, let alone 4 months. So we just sort of have to wait and see.
Yeah, we'll keep tabs on that and see what happens in the next couple weeks. But I will say this, we have been following, as you know, a lot of e-racing. Charlie races in one of those series. We'll talk about that. But coming through the pipe wire over the weekend was that Tyrek is going to headline the second Road to Indy iRacing e-series. Tyrek, for those of you who don't know, they are a tire supplier around the country. They support a lot of grassroots racing. And this is going to be interesting, too, because they do have the list of tracks that these Road to Indy drivers will be participating in starting this weekend. They'll be at the Digital Worldwide Technology Raceway. I'm just going to stop saying digital because we all know it's digital. Then they're going to Laguna Seca, Lucas Oil Raceway, Watkins Glen, and Iowa Speedway. The series will once again be administered by Extreme Motorsports with technical support from Rimotech e-Racing Management. And our good buddy Rob Howden's going to be the voice along with commentator Jonathan Simon. He'll be returning to the comms. We'll also see, I would imagine we'd see returning champion Philippe Denez in there. And Charlie, you'll appreciate this. They actually do run the Pro Mazda that you actually ran back in the late 2000s.
Yeah, to that point, actually, you riddled them off so quickly. How many rounds are they doing?
Let's see. We got Worldwide Technology, so that's one, Laguna Seca, Lucas Oil Raceway, Watkins Glen, Iowa Speedway. So it's going to be a five-week series.
Okay, because the interesting thing is that they announced a few weeks ago that iRacing is releasing the current USF 2000 car and the current Pro 2000 car. I think they're coming at the end of this current iRacing season. So,
okay, so
if I can check what season we're in right now, okay. So I think it's coming in June sometime.
Oh wow! So probably after the series, probably the third iteration, they're going to do it, but. You know, it's great to see this because not only do you have everyone in the Road to Indy series in it, you see some owners in there. I know Ricardo Juncos has done it. Peter Dempsey just doing Peter Dempsey stuff, so that's not a surprise. But, you know, at this point, it's something.
Was that you just cut out?
I said, at this point, it's something, you know, especially when you have guys like Peter Dempsey and Ricardo Juncos and a couple others coming in to do it as guest appearances as owners.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, it's the best we can do. And like I said, the last time I was on your show, I think we're lucky that we're still able to do this and we're able to sort of spend time with each other as a community, watching and racing against each other. Yeah, I mean, I think it's great, even though I haven't actually been watching a whole lot.
I've been trying to watch some. I unfortunately have not been watching you guys race because I always forget that it's on. speaking of that, Scott Andrews and Speedy Dan Clark won at Mall Sports, while Max Easterson claimed your first ever FRP iRacing Challenge presented by Hoosier Tires Championship. The screenshot that we have here from RTD Media shows one of the races with Clark, Mullen, and Rivard on the podium. You finished 11th in that race. What's that been like for you?
It's, you know, to be honest, it's a lot more competitive than I expected. I knew that some of the guys were going to be really fast. I know Max Esterson, he was supposed to make his debut this year in the F1600 series. But I'd heard that, you know, he won the top split of the 12 hours of Sebring. For people that aren't familiar with iRacing, it's an actual full 12-hour race. You have teammates that you swap out the cars with. And it's unbelievably competitive. There's like, you know, several hundred, if not more than 1,000 people that compete in this. And then they split them up by iRating, which is basically over your iRacing career, when you win races or you place well in a race, you gain iRating. And when you place poorly in a race, you lose iRating. So it's sort of like a cumulative rank. So to win the top split of an event where 1,000 or more people are competing is very competitive. So he's one of the top iRacers. So I knew that, you know, he was going to be fast. I knew that a couple other people were going to be fast, but I didn't quite expect everyone to be so fast with maybe a couple of exceptions. So the first race I really struggled, and the second race I got a little bit better. And you see this race, I nearly broke the top 10. I was battling with Liston for most of the race, and I kind of just sat behind him. And I was like, okay, I'm not going to be able to drive away from him if I get in front. So I just sat behind him, and my plan was on the last lap to make the move down the back straight into turn 8. But he caught Chris Kearse, and so we were both going around him, and I got sideways, and we bumped, and that kind of ruined my plan. So I finished behind both of them. But yeah, it's been a lot more competitive than I expected.
Well, looks like you also won the Hard Charger Award for race 6 as well. So that's something. At least you're coming home with something this round.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things in iRacing is that if you just stay out of trouble, especially if you start in the back, you're probably going to make up some spots. So that was kind of my goal. When if I'm qualifying 19th or 20th, my goal is to kind of just stay out of trouble. And there's a good chance that you're going to get in the top 10 if you just do that.
So the standings for the two races in race five, your top three look like this: Scott Andrews, Colin Mullen, and Miles Crabb, followed by Max Esterson, Jean-Christophe Treja, and Dan Clark in sixth, seventh, William Liston, Jackson Lee in eighth, Burton August in ninth, Connor, I think he's clubbing in tenth. I should probably zoom in on this. Looks like Charlie, ended up 15 laps down in that first race. So what happened there?
I got caught up in we were coming out of turn two on the first lap, and a couple of guys got sideways, and I just had nowhere to go. So that was the end of my race.
Hey, you know what?
I could have done a tow back to the pits and a quick repair and kept going, but I don't really feel like driving around a lap down in a skippy car.
Why does that not sound familiar? Race two, Dan Clark, Colin Mullen, Zach Rivard, top three, Jackson Lee fourth, Miles Crabb in fifth, Zachary Vanier in sixth, William Liston in seventh, eighth, Kearse ninth, Charlie, and tenth, Brandon Newey. Now on to FR Americas. The FR Americas team known as Momentum Motorsports will be taking their operation to Caroline Motorsports Park in Kershaw, South Carolina. And with all these smaller tracks, Charlie, I'm really surprised that there are more teams not doing that. I know that Jay Howard has an operation, but he spent some time at one of the Midwestern tracks to make, to give his guys more track time. Same goes with Turn 3 Motorsport, but I think a lot of these teams would probably benefit because they can go to these younger drivers coming out of karting and say, hey, we have unlimited track time at this racetrack.
Yeah, I mean, I think it, I guess it depends on the relationship that the team has with the track. And I would be interested to, I guess I should read closely through this press release, but, do they in fact get unlimited track time, or like whenever the track doesn't have anything going on, they just say, yeah, you guys can go and run as much as you want? I mean, if that's the case, then that's great. That makes a lot of sense.
So here's what Michael Cummings, the from CMP Operating Company, says: as the operators of Caroline Motorsports Park, we are delighted that Momentum Motorsports has chosen CMP for their new home. Being able to offer on-site driver development and race car prep services is a key ingredient of our vision of the facility. Doing this with a company with Momentum Motorsports' track record of success makes us extremely excited for what the future holds for CMP. So sounds like that they will have at least some sort of track time.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty cool. If I was a team owner, I would definitely be interested in a setup like that. It seems like a smaller scale version of Ferrari having their own test track.
Oh, yeah, it's a Fiorano. All right, let's move into the 600-pound gorilla in the room. I will say this. We've been talking about how great iRacing has been for series, but we have seen, I would say, the ugly side of things. Before I say this, I will say I am disgusted with the fact of Formula One fans acting the way they are, forgetting that their two saints basically did the same thing twice each with mixed success each time in real life. But we'll go ahead and say this: the 275 miler at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway for IndyCar. Charlie, you saw it. What would be the best description of that race?
I saw the reaction. I didn't actually see it live, but I definitely watched. I saw Simon Pagenaud's stream. I saw Ferrucci's stream, mm-hmm. And I saw Lando's reaction to all of it after the fact. I guess where it seems like it started, I think Lando was making a move into turn two to make it three wide. Like, he dove down inside of two other cars, and that ended up pushing Pagenaud, something like that. So a little bit later, towards the end of the race, you could see on Pagino's stream, he was talking to his engineer about taking out Lando as he was driving out to the pits, and then his engineer was giving him updates on where, like, how much time back Norris was. And then coming out of turn four with Lando getting a run on Pagino, Pagino kind of moved over into him and took him out. And so, you know, at that point he said, oh, well, I was just going into the pits. I was just, you know, trying to slow him down. I wasn't trying to take him out. But when you make comments about taking someone out, like a few laps before you do, it's not a good look. And then in an unrelated incident at the end of the race, there was a group going into turn three, the lead group. I forget who exactly it was, but they took themselves out. And what ended up happening was, I forget who the victim was, but
I think it was Ericsson.
Ferrucci was, who was it?
Ericsson was the first victim.
Right. He was the one. He was one of the ones that went out in turn three. Right. Right.
Yes.
Right. Who was the one that was taken out going to start finish?
That was Askew.
Askew. Right. Yes. Okay. Yeah. So, Ferrucci is following Askew out of turn four, going to the finish line on the last lap. You can kind of tell he doesn't have enough momentum to get past him before start finish. So he gets, you know, far enough alongside that his front wheel is a little bit ahead of Askew's rear wheel. And he just turns into him. It's like it's blatant as could possibly be.
Oh yeah, it was extremely blatant.
Yeah. And then he's, you know, he's like, oh, it's just a game, we're just having fun, it's for the fans. But if it's for the fans, and like the fans kind of want to see a good race, right? They don't want to see you, you know, just screwing around. You know, take it, you know, maybe you don't have to take it so seriously that you have your, you know, like the McLaren people do, where they have their real race engineers pulling data and making setups. But, you know, have a little bit of respect for the competition.
Yeah, what I was told, we actually sat down and talked with Connor. We're going to have that next. One thing he did say, and I'll preview the interview a little bit, he did say that it was going to be a fixed setup. So the engineers are just there for, you know, field numbers and spotting. Mm-hmm. And okay. Same with the Penske guys. But Steve Myers has come out with a comment. He's the vice president of iRacing. He says, this is an IndyCar private series with participants exclusively chosen by them. We are not in the business of policing anybody's private leagues for racing issues. Does it suck that he made mockery of a great opportunity for the series in iRacing? Absolutely. That being, you know, Simon Pagenaud. But, you know, I made the mistake of going into the Formula One Reddit, and, you know, they're saying, you know, oh, he brought it on himself, and, you know, they don't understand what Lando did wrong. And the more I watch it, it looks to me like Lando took an opportunistic dive into turn two, Graham got spooked, moved up into Pagenaud, and that's what caused the crash. So that one, if I was race director, I would give that to Lando, because you just don't go three wide into a turn at full speed at Indy. That's just stupid.
Yeah, that's a fair assessment, I think. And also, I mean, you mentioned this briefly, that iRacing handled this properly. I mean, they have a sporting code where if you're doing public races or official races, you're expected to keep to that. But private, and, you know, in a private hosted session, anything goes. I've been in private sessions where they turn damage off and all the rules are off, and you can do whatever you want. Like we had, I was part of David Land's stream, the
yes,
YouTuber.
I remember that.
And,
yes.
Yeah, it was fun. We were using the old, 2011 IndyCar. We had them on the track at the same time as the Pro Mazda and a sprint car, an asphalt sprint car. And it was chaos and it was hilarious. And so if iRacing is going to police private sessions, then they should police stuff like that, which is, you know, not what they should do. So anyways, iRacing handled this, you know, it's out of their hands, and it's more in IndyCar's hands.
Here's the thing. I feel bad for iRacing because they're stuck between a rock and a hard place, because, as we said, this is a private league. At the same time, I don't think IndyCar should punish anybody, but just pull, you know, Simon and Ferrucci inside and said, hey, you kind of made us look like dumbasses there. You need to, you know, apologize or do something, make face, because you've got fans from all over the world that are upset. And I understand that. I'm not upset. I'm not disappointed. I'm just shaking my head. Yeah, it was stupid, but at the same time, it's a game. If this were real life, you know as well as I do that I would be screaming from the top of my lungs to sit them out for the rest of the season, but they were behind a computer wheel, thankfully didn't have any consequences, and they got up in the heat of the moment of, oh, it's just a game. I can ruin somebody else's game and nobody's going to get upset. Well, now you have people who are all tightly wound because they took out our golden boy. Well, guess what? Things happen, okay? You know, we saw Bubba Wallace lose a sponsor over rage quitting because he was pissed off. You know, what's next? Are people going to be going to John Menard and saying, oh, well, you need to stop sponsoring Simon Pagenaud because he took out Lando Norris? No. The only real-life consequence that should have happened was what happened to Kyle Larson because he dropped a very racially toned word that he shouldn't have, and because he's in the public eye, I'm sorry, he deserves everything he gets. Will he come back stronger from this? I hope so, because the kid has talent. But the point I'm trying to make is nobody got hurt, just some feelings, but at the same time, this is going to be an opportunity for IndyCar PR to sit back and not have to worry about making some sort of rivalry, because now we've got natural rivalries. It's going to be Ferrucci versus the field and Pagenaud versus McLaren. Oh, wait a second. Wasn't Pagenaud supposed to go to McLaren next year? I doubt that's going to happen now.
Yeah, I mean, I think I have so many thoughts. I'm not sure where to start now. I think with Ferrucci, I've never been a fan of him. You know, he had a bad reputation coming into IndyCar. I think that his performances, along with some buttering up by NBC, made him look a lot better last year. But he's still he's a villain, and I don't like him. But at the same time, I acknowledge that IndyCar could really use a villain. It could really use a bad guy, and I think that he would play that part really well. So those are my sort of mixed feelings with Ferrucci. And then I forgot the rest of the stuff I was going to say.
I hate when that happens.
So the bottom line with this whole thing is that, and with these racing series coming to iRacing, you can say it's just a game, but the bottom line is that the audience is real, and that means that sponsors, people are watching it. Sponsors are going to care what people do. I do think that Bubba Wallace's incident, maybe not merited losing a sponsor, but it was, it was a pretty childish, he was taken out and he was like, ah, this sucks. This is why I don't take it serious. I'm not going to do this anymore. It's like, I've been taken out in iRaces plenty of times. I throw my hands up. Sometimes I curse, to myself, but then I get up and I either finish the race or I just get in the next race in a couple hours. You kind of just get over it. Like, it was kind of, and it does put the sponsor in a bad light when you act like that. And then I kind of think the same with the actions in IndyCar. People are actually, real people are watching this just because it's a game. Yep. And yeah, I mean, obviously then you could very easily kill, let alone on the front straightaway at Indy where the car, who knows, the car could hop over the pit wall or something and be a huge disaster. So, but, I think even Ferrucci isn't going to do something like that in real life.
No. And, I do want to say, yes, I realize that this is a game. And I know I said that. I probably upset some people. But at the same time, there are, this is something for the sponsors to, showcase that this is what my driver's doing. And if I'm Sealmaster, if I'm Menards, I would be sitting down and talking to these drivers and saying, hey, yeah, we realize this is a game, but you're making us look bad.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And actually I was reading an article in Sports Business Journal a few days ago, that was talking about the teams are, some of them are kind of giving away, in iRacing liveries for free.
Yep.
But they're looking at using it to charge real money and to sort of be an onboard for real sponsors to come into their teams. So becoming real business. Like I said, the audience is real. And if the audience is real, then the money is real.
Yep. So we'll see what happens in the next couple of weeks. Hopefully IndyCar decides to come back. And by the way, I wish that they would have gone to Bathurst for their fantasy track. This is the week that was supposed to be the fantasy track, but obviously the being the month of May, you know, I'm sure NBC or somebody at Penske Entertainment Corporation decided, well, you know, maybe we should probably do a race at, you know, IMS on the Oval.
Mm-hmm. So is this the episode to talk about what IndyCar is going to do in esports this month, or is that for a later one?
Let's do that next week. So we'll have you back on next week. We'll discuss, because I don't see IndyCar doing anything. So yeah, let's circle back next week. We'll talk about that in news, and we'll go from there.
Okay, I think that's a good plan.
That's a good plan. Oh, by the way, motorsport.com. Button, Alonso, Johnson may all race third McLaren SP IndyCar. That'll be interesting. So you get one in, you know, comes in for a pit, swap drivers, like sports cars. we'll have more on that next week with some opinion. Charlie Ante, thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week. Coming up next, Connor Daly joins us for our sit-down on sim racing. Again, I do want to caution you, this was recorded before the antics of last week, and by the way, because of that, Scott McLaughlin was your winner and Connor Daly second. We'll be back.
This is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
Well, with the sim racing going on, we've been able to kind of divulge into everything else, and a lot of drivers who are trying to make their way into sim racing, so those listening can know how to do it. We talked to Scott McLaughlin on it a couple weeks ago. This week we have someone who I've known for about a decade too. Watched him come up through Indy Pro 2000, Connor Daly. Connor, thanks for joining us, man. How you been?
You know, just trying to survive, day at a time, one day at a time, but yeah, making the best of the situation, I think, for sure.
I was going to say, I keep seeing a meme on the IndyCar Reddit of you, bad luck Brian, you get a full finally get a full season in, and a worldwide pandemic ends up ending it. It just seems to be the story of your career, but nonetheless, you always persevere, so I'm really excited to see what happens with you once you get back up and running, especially running with Ed Carpenter Racing and Carlin Racing, helping them with their Oval program.
Yeah, man, it is weird. The meme definitely is real. It's crazy to think about. You know, this year is super important for me and our sponsor, the U.S. Air Force. You know, even before we had the Carlin program added in to kind of cap off the season, you know, we wanted, obviously, you know, we have a lot more races with the U.S. Air Force livery on the car, you know, so a lot more opportunity to, you know, grow the program. But, you know, obviously that the whole sponsorship, you know, diagram is now changing. And a lot of, you know, a lot of the Air Force, what the Air Force needs out of sponsorship is a lot of human interaction and a lot of, you know, at track, you know, human interaction and human traffic through their, you know, through their display. So it's going to be interesting to see how, you know, how it all progresses, but either way, you know, we still have a job in front of us here. Oddly enough, you know, if we still continue to start at Texas, I actually won't be starting the season with Ed Carpenter Racing, which is weird, but, you know, I really enjoy working with the guys at Carlin last year. I think it'll be the first time ever in IndyCar I've gone back to the same track with the same team, you know, 2 years in a row. So that'll be, you know, that'll be really nice to actually look at stuff from the previous year that I was a part of. I've never done that before. So that'll be nice to work on and then kind of just go from there. It'll be a weird year in general. We all know that, but I think everyone's just dying to get back going again, even if we have to start with no fans or whatever it is. We've just got to get something real going here, or else I think we're all going to go crazy.
Well, you guys already kind of have that no fans aspect in the iRacing, as you're sitting in front of a computer the whole time, but you still have your buddies that you're chatting to. I've watched a couple of your Twitch streams, which have been actually pretty and more entertaining sometimes than some of the action on track because of your commentary and the commentary around you. Let's go ahead and talk about your setup. I know a lot of them vary. I've seen, you know, stuff like Simon has in his house. You know, you have what Graham has. And then you get to what you have, which is basically what a lot of people have in their own houses.
Yeah, I mean, the crazy thing is there's a lot of different ways you can do it. I mean, the joy of getting on iRacing is you could do it, you know, with a very simple wheel and pedals, you know, mounted to a, you know, kitchen table chair or a kitchen desk and, you know, whatever. And that's, you know, I've got the very most basic setup you could possibly have, or you have full motion, you know, and a lot of different, you know, three different monitors wrapped around your face, you know, full Thrustmaster or whatever, you know, who have Fanatec wheels that have, you know, lots of blinking lights and incredible force feedback. But yeah, I'm definitely running the low budget operation, which is annoying because we've done a lot of road course racing. And, you know, as a driver, like I've always been, one to work on the car with my engineer. That's been sort of my selling point. That's why Carlin brought me in. That's why, you know, I've been brought in to help teams like Harding and so on. But it's impossible to do that in iRacing because I can't feel anything through a piece of wood that I'm sitting on. So I'm not good at it. I won't ever be good at it because I'm just not, even on the Chevy simulator that we use, you know, for our actual testing, you know, in real life, you know, when Renus and I go there, Renus is a lot better at racing video games than me. And, you know, it'll take me most of the day after adjusting the car sort of to what I want, you know, to get to where, you know, what kind of speed he can do sort of just right off the bat. But yeah, I won't have that opportunity in iRacing just because it is what it is, but I'm fine with it because we show up and we got to have a good time with it.
And doesn't, correct me if I'm wrong, but doesn't Dallara have like a huge rig that, you know, simulates all the movement, you know, moves you up and down, you know, depending on how the car handles?
Yeah, and that's what Chevy and Honda use as well. Not quite as large as that, but you don't, that one's almost over the top. You don't need that much motion or that much of a, you know, actual unit to properly simulate real life. The Chevy simulator, they do a great job at Pratt & Miller with the tire model and the car and the motion on, you know, giving us the ability to actually develop stuff for the car. Whereas iRacing is still, I think this is the first time they've really got a ton of IndyCar drivers on the IndyCar, and there certainly is quite a lot of differences compared to real life. But still is probably the best, you know, simulation game you can play on the internet.
Now, have the developers of iRacing come to talk to you or other drivers and see how similar the car in iRacing with the 2020 package is compared to what the 2020 package is today?
Well, I mean, I've only done 1.3 days in the car with the AeroScreen and the new package, so it's hard to really say, but I think a lot of the drivers have told iRacing that, hey, look, there's a lot here that is, you know, could be different and could improve. But there's also, you know, stuff that's, you know, that's done really well. So I don't know if they're going to change any of that. Probably not. But I'm sure they don't mind hearing, you know, stuff from, you know, 33, you know, IndyCar drivers that have actually competed in the car or, you know, have been in the car quite a lot. So I think it's good for them overall, I hope.
Connor Daly joins us on Inside Open, where we're chatting about sim racing. Now, one thing that I like that you and a handful of other drivers are doing, you're not just focusing solely on IndyCar. If there's an iRace, you're running in it, and it doesn't matter what kind of car it is. And it's mainly because of the entertainment value that you're giving these fans, but it's got to give you something else to think about other than, oh, geez, we're not at a racetrack today.
Yeah, I mean, there has been some fun moments for sure. You know, Ed and I got to run a NASCAR truck race at Gateway, you know, last week. And I, you know, I didn't get to practice at all in that thing because we were doing so much IndyCar stuff for COTA. But, you know, showed up, did, you know, was there for 3 hours or whatever it was, and had a great time. And the rallycross stuff has been a lot of fun. I mean, I think there are, you know, it's been tough to be in quarantine. It's been terrible to be away from, you know, real life. But, you know, never in my life did I think I would somehow become friends with Travis Pastrana while we're in quarantine and become sim racing friends with those guys at Nitro Circus. So, I've really enjoyed that with Alex and Hinch and Travis Pastrana, Chad Reed as well. It's been super, super fun to drive those cars and do those races. But yeah, sort of almost up for anything, and I've almost signed myself up for too much that I'm trying to actually back it down a little bit now.
Yeah, it seems like Ed's taken to iRacing a lot easier than I thought he would. I was able to watch his practice for at Homestead over the weekend, and I tell you what, he's got it down pat himself.
Yeah, he's done really well. I think he's gotten super into it, which is, again, something I never, ever thought would happen in 2020. But yeah, he cheated a little bit at Homestead qualifying. He did do some donuts before the qualifying session, which I didn't think was allowed, but it is what it is. Got him probably a tenth and a half. But it's, you know, it's one of those things that I've really actually enjoyed playing with him, because he's a good racer on there, and I love his honesty as well. And I think the fans appreciate, you know, Ed on the internet as well, because, you know, the guy doesn't tweet much. He doesn't do much on the internet. So it's kind of cool to get, you know, an in-depth look at the lifestyle of Ed Carpenter.
And, you know, people who don't get a chance to see Ed as Ed, you know, take him the wrong way, because he's, you know, not a driver that goes out front and is personal like you or Hinch. So it's great to see that Ed's breaking out of the shell in iRacing.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's been a lot of fun. I mean, he's enjoyed it. I think, you know, as a team, we're sticking together and we're working together. You know, we've got a couple of our assistant engineers and head engineers kind of working with us on strategy side for the races, more from a fun standpoint, but it gets us all continuing to communicate, which is, you know, which is good.
Let's talk about Twitch real quick, because that's where a lot of people can see. It's almost like an in-car for sim racers, because they're able to see what the driver's doing. They're able to, you know, kind of interact and whatnot, hear what you're saying to your engineer or other drivers. How have your views been in compared to, you know, like a normal, like Call of Duty night, for example?
Well, I think the Twitch stratosphere is quite entertaining. It's cool. I mean, I've been on Twitch for a long time. Like, I just, as an active fan of other streamers and just a gamer myself. But it's you know, I used to tweet out that I was playing Call of Duty or Apex Legends or whatever. And you know, we'd get a few different viewers. Some of the biggest you know, viewership that we got was, you know, was when Joseph, Alex, Colton, and I, we all played Forza like a year ago. Or probably a little bit more than a year ago now. And that was a great time. And so I think I saw the, you know, the potential there. And obviously my fan base is a racing fan base. So, you know, everyone had been asking if I was ever going to get onto iRacing. And I said no. Sure enough, here we are doing it every weekend. So it's going to be, you know, so it's been fun. I enjoy the Twitch community a lot. There's a lot of great fans. I mean, it is truly the best way to interact with your fan base, you know, while you're doing something. So I think that's something that is, you know, is really cool. And I like talking to the people. I like being able to, you know, communicate with the chat and put up some funny clips about what was happening. And, you know, that's what it's all about, is trying to give someone, you know, some people something to stay entertained by, you know, in this wild time.
And let's talk real quick also about the, one, this conversation, the IndyCar Challenge. This has been, I think, one of a great chance to see these drivers in what now we would consider equal equipment go out and show off their prowess. But IMS, you know, after airing this, the race is going to be over. But I'm hearing that they're going to be able to change you guys are going to be able to change your setups. Is that correct?
No, okay. Not anymore. Okay. Yeah, I think. Thankfully, that's going to be fixed, because when that was brought up, all of us, well, 90% of us were like, yeah, that's the dumbest idea ever. We're going to be sitting here for 14 hours a day with our engineers potentially developing new setups that have nothing to do with real life because it works in a video game. You know what I mean? So thankfully, we went to a fixed setup. But definitely drivers are going to have to qualify their way in, because I think there's a lot of people who want to get in the virtual Indy, whatever distance the race is. So it'll be cool.
Yeah. And, you know, it's great to see, because drivers are still able to show their personalities, I think, a little bit more than they would on a normal race weekend, because you don't have the ultimate stress. I mean, you know, we've heard some drivers say, yeah, there's stress there, but it's not as big as it would during a normal race day. So drivers are able to let loose just a little bit more.
Yeah, I think so. And there's obviously an open chat channel. I think there are some drivers who are absolutely hilarious. I think there are some drivers that we are seeing are, I don't know, less personable than others.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think honestly, it's almost exactly what I assumed everyone would be saying in the car, or exactly how, like, we don't actually talk to each other much during the race weekend. Like, if anything at all, right? Unless we're teammates, because we're all in our own trailers. We're all doing our own things. I mean, the only time I see the other guys is either at driver intros or the autograph session. So, like, we're not actually communicating with each other much. So now we literally have an open channel, like, the whole time to either communicate with each other, talk about what's going on the track, talking about other drivers. So I think it's been really interesting, and I think there's going to be some rivalry and potentially some hatred purely through internet motor racing, which is wild to think about.
But just remember, it's Alex Rossi against the field. Always has been for some reason. I don't know why.
I don't know about that. I think Alex has been hilarious.
Yeah.
Poor Alex. He's like, we're trying hard. He's trying hard. He's putting a lot of hours in. But again, like, sim racing just doesn't seem to be our thing. Like, there's just something about it. Like, you see, you know, the field, obviously the Penske guys are always good. Will Power has done something like 10,000 iRaces or something ridiculous, someone was saying. And Simon's done a lot of it as well. But like the rest of us, like Alex, James, and I, we never play iRacing. We never play racing video games ever. And so, like, this is the first time sort of for everyone, you know, getting into this world. And yes, we do take it very seriously. Like, we are competitors. Like, we want to go out there and potentially do well. But in the end, like, we're not expecting much because, you know, it's just not our thing.
Oh, and I will say this final thing. Past couple races, we've seen, you know, some stars from NASCAR come over, Jimmy Johnson, Dale Jr., Kyle Busch. That had to be really cool to race up against them, albeit in a virtual setting.
Yeah, like, I've really enjoyed the oval racing. Michigan and Motegi, I think were so much fun because the racing is close, the strategy is tight, the tire wear is really interesting in the iRacing model. So I love that. You know, talked to Dale Jr. for quite a lot, you know, before and after that race, and you know, it was really cool to hear what he had to say. And, you know, Kyle Busch, I don't really know that well, but it was obviously cool to have him in there. And then Lando Norris for sure at COTA. That was a little less cool, I think, because he destroyed everyone, but he's obviously really good at it. And he's a good kid. He's a nice guy and, you know, very entertaining on the internet. So it's a cool opportunity to kind of, again, it's the same with the Travis Pastrana deal. You know what I mean? It's getting drivers and personalities from all over the sport, you know, together over the internet to kind of just hang out and do hilarious stuff behind the virtual wheel.
All right, so Connor, for those who are interested in watching you race, how many times a week can we see you in the virtual cockpit?
Well, I mean, it depends. Realistically, it's guaranteed on Saturdays for the IndyCar event and Friday nights as well for the Rallycross event. I'll probably stream on Thursdays for some of the practice racing. So it's basically a Thursday, Friday, Saturday program. But it, you know, if I'm feeling Call of Duty on Warzone Wednesday, it's probably going to stream Call of Duty as well. Twitch.tv/ConnorDaily22. So come hang out. It's a fun time.
Fantastic. Connor Daly, thanks for joining us. And once the season gets going, we'll talk to Bree and get you back on so we can actually talk some real racing.
Love that. Thank you.
Connor Daly joining us on Inside Open Wheel. We will be back after this. Have an Android device? Make sure that you follow Inside Open Wheel on Google Podcasts so anytime we publish a new episode, you get a notification right away. Also, you can listen to past episodes from the beginning. And Spotify also has all Inside Open Wheel editions, so you can listen whenever and wherever you want. That's Google Play and Spotify, coming soon to Apple Podcasts.
This is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
Well, with the month of May being a little different this year with no cars on track at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, I still want to keep things as normal as possible. So I figured I'd bring in a good friend of mine who knows a heck of a lot more about the Indianapolis Motor Speedway than I think I'll ever remember. Paul Dalby, he is from the Field of 33 blog, and we worked together back at the old Planet IRL days. God, that was, what, 10 years ago?
That's been a long time. Long time ago. Yeah, that's 10, 11 years ago now.
I was just thinking about that. We should get Cole on someday and see what he's been up to lately. But
I think Cole is getting married, actually.
Oh, that's right. So he's joining the wedded bliss that we both have been a part
of.
That's
right. That's right.
Should we?
Wishes to him.
Yeah, exactly. Let's give him all the bad advice so that way he can...
I don't know that I'm going to take wedding advice from...
All right. So this week we're going to cover rookies this week because it was supposed to be rookie orientation program. And as most people know, rookie orientation program is for anyone who has never completed in the Indianapolis 500 at all. The rookie of the year, though, started in 1952, but there have been some strange rookies over the years, especially more in the past 10, 15 years. So we're going to go over that. I want to start off, though, with 1911, because even though it was the first 500, all 40 participants were considered rookies, but only 23 of those participated in early events at the Speedway for the first couple of years.
Boy, you're really putting me on the spot here. Yes.
I'm going back.
If you go back to 1911, I always find it a little odd that when you think of the list of rookie winners, and there have been 10 rookie winners over the course of 103 runnings of the 500, 10 rookie winners, I always find it a little bit odd that they include Ray Haroon in that list of rookie winners of the 500, which, of course, if you look at it solely from the standpoint of this was their first 500-mile race, then yes, obviously Ray Haroon would qualify. But Ray Haroon already had a history at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway from the time it was built in 1909. He ran races then, ran races in 1910, had actually gone into retirement and was talked out of retirement to come back for the one race in 1911, which, of course, he won as a quote-unquote rookie, and then off into the land of retirement once again, never, as far as I know, to never race again after that. Initial victory in the 500.
Yeah, that sounds right. Another strange rookie not too long after that was Louis Meyer. Didn't qualify for the 27 race, served as a relief driver, comes back in 1928. Oh, by the way, you're still the rookie because he didn't start the race. And he goes out to win the race and was considered a rookie then as well.
You know, I always want to put an asterisk next to Louis Meyer's name in the list of rookie winners, because as you mentioned, he did actually run relief for Wilbur Shaw in the entry that actually finished fourth in 1927. Such irony that Louis Meyer and Wilbur Shaw were both first time drivers in the 500 in 1927. Both would go on to become three-time winners, the first three-time winners in 500 history. And then beyond their accolades as winners, as three-time winners, of course, Wilbur Shaw would eventually be the point man or the link between Eddie Reckenbacker and Tony Holman when the Holman family purchased the Speedway in 1945. Wilbur Shaw stayed on board as the president until he went down in a plane crash in 1954, just before, I think it was actually the day before his birthday or right around his birthday. I believe it was late October of 54. And then, of course, Louis Meyer, the one you mentioned, who technically ran, as you said, in 1927, but was still a rookie because he hadn't started a race in 1928 and then became the rookie winner. Of course, he would go on to Speedway lore as well, taking over the Miller engines and eventually turning that into the Offenhauser engine and becoming the engine that would dominate the Indianapolis 500 through the early 60s. So both of those two drivers that you mentioned that were rookies in 27 and 28 would be forever linked to the Speedway for the next 30 or 40 years and make names well beyond just being winners of the 500.
Then the first Rookie of the Year award winner was Art Cross back in 1952. You got to go over to 1963 with Jim Clark coming over from Europe running some Formula One races. Mm-hmm. And that was a little strange because you see somebody who has these international accolades come in. Oh yeah, you gotta take the rookie test.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's no matter who you are, and you are a rookie at Indianapolis until you qualify and start a race, and that doesn't matter if you're Jim Clark or you're Emerson Fittipaldi or Nigel Mansell or Fernando Alonso or you are Milka Duno, which I feel a little dirty even putting all those names in the same sentence with Milka Duno, but. Doesn't matter who you are, you have to pass the rookie orientation test, and you have to go through the rigors of being evaluated as part of that test. It seems to be more of a formality these days. You know, back in the 60s and 70s, it wasn't unheard of for somebody to show up for a rookie orientation test and have USAC turn them away and say they should probably go gain a little more experience before they try to tackle the speedway. We haven't seen that in a long time, but absolutely, you are treated like a rookie until you qualify and start a race.
And that was
absolutely true.
And that Milka Duno reference was $10 in the Venezuelan oil bucket.
Well, you weren't expecting the Milka Duno reference.
I was not actually. God, you know, that reminds me. I think you. Yes, I remember telling you the story immediately after the last Chicagoland race that they had here. I ran into Milka because I knew her through Peter Barron, former SAMAX owner, and, you know, had a nice chat with her. And her bodyguard just came up and swooped up. I'm like, dude, we've known each other for a while.
Well, you know, her time was very constrained back in the day. So, you know, she had to make sure she had to have people to keep her where she needed to be.
Well, one oddity with the rookies, too, in the 60s and 70s, actually, was Bill Puterbaugh. Failed to qualify six times, finally cracked the nut in 1975, and was still scored as a rookie, even though he spent so much time practicing to get into the field.
Yeah, yeah, it's not, you know, like we said, you are a rookie. Doesn't matter how many laps you turn or how many times you try to qualify or how many times you show up year after year after year. Until you put a car on the grid race morning and are pushed away, you are considered a rookie. Absolutely.
And I think that's interesting, too, because you even have NASCAR Cup champions such as Kurt Busch try and get into the field. Champ car winners is Ryan Hunter Ray. You had a whole bunch of champ car drivers who also had to be declared rookies in 2008 in spite of all of their oval experience. Now, a couple did get waivers because they had enough oval experience, but still, the track is different than most other tracks because you don't have four distinct corners like that. You used to have it in Ontario, used to have it at Homestead, but not at Indy.
Yeah, and Indianapolis is such a beast on its own. You hear people talk about how hard can it possibly be? It's two long straightaways and four identical turns. How hard can that possibly be? But everyone who's ever driven that track has talked about, even though the straightaways are 5/8 of a mile, the turns are all 90 degrees, banked at 9 degrees in some minutes, which, by the way, you hear people say it's 9 degrees 12 minutes. It's actually not. I figured this out. I actually found blueprints of the construction a few years ago, and I don't know where the 9 degrees 12 minutes comes from. It's a little bit higher than that. It's about 9.5 degrees. Not that anyone asked, but I like throwing that fact out there anyway every once in a while. But it's such a big facility. The original track, the original property was a mile long and a half a mile wide. So there are literally atmospheric differences between turns 1 and 3 or 2 and 4. You can have heavy cloud cover at the south end of the track and bright sunshine at the north end of the track. Totally changes the characteristic of the track. You can have the way the wind swirls around the grandstands on the front straight. I've heard a lot of drivers over the years say that turn 2 is the most difficult turn there because it's open. It's not as guarded by the grandstands as the other three turns, particularly turns 1 and 4. So turn 2 is often the trickiest because of the wind. at most other ovals, be it a half mile or a mile track like Milwaukee or Phoenix, a 1.5, the traditional, right, not traditional, the kind of cookie cutters, if you will, even the 2 miles like Michigan, Fontana, the old Texas World Speedway, you didn't have that much difference between the four turns. But Indianapolis is really, it's a beast of its own. And a lot of guys have adapted well and quick, and a lot of guys have never gotten it.
Paul Dalby from Field of 33 joins us. We're talking about Indy during the month of May. And that leads me to the Dragon Racing duo. I'm going to say duo because in 2011, we talked about this a couple days ago, of Ho Pintung, who was originally entered in that 8 car, and then Scott Speed.
Oh, I don't know what you can really say about that.
Talked about Milka Duno, so I figured I'd bring that up.
You did, and on paper, that is a team that should have had success. Founded originally, I believe Jay Penske was part of that. Obviously, his family name doesn't need any introduction. Jill DeFerrin certainly had credentials to speak on his own, a 2003 500 winner. That team should have been better than they ever were, but... and now, I, to be honest, some of the details of that whole thing have kind of been relegated to unimportant parts of my brain. But I do remember, and maybe you remember better than I do, was Ho Pintung started the month and either couldn't get to speed or had an accident. And I recall Scott Speed coming in a somewhat cocky attitude. And I don't remember the specifics. If he said something, if he had insinuated something, whatever it was, I remember there being a feeling that he was expecting that he was just going to hop in the car and show everyone else how it was done. And I don't remember if he crashed or just couldn't get to speed. I feel like he just never got to speed. And there were other issues with that entry, but I think it opened his eyes pretty quickly that, maybe, hey, coming from Formula One, maybe these spec Indy cars aren't quite as easy as we thought they were from across the pond.
If I remember correctly, I thought it was Ho Pintung crashed. Scott Speed could not get up to speed, so they brought in Patrick Carpentier to try and get the car into the field.
That could be. There's been a lot of water under the bridge since then.
Yeah,
that was definitely a... definitely an eye-opening experience, and that had to be close to the end of the line for, at that particular time, was known as Dragon Race, and it went through several iterations, but
yeah,
that was getting down to the end of it.
And of course, now they're seeing success in Formula E. Who would have guessed that?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You just never know how these things come and go, the ebb and flow, and where certain teams may find success and find hard times in other series.
And, the past couple of years, we've had Rossi, who won the race. He's the last rookie winner. Alonso in 2017, Robert Wickens in 2018. Last year, Santino Ferrucci winning the rookie of the year. Of course, 2017 is the one I remember the most being most controversial because rookie of the year, it's supposed to be the fastest rookie or the most improved rookie throughout the month of May. Well, they took it as, well, Alonso's here, so let's just give it to him.
Oh, that's not exactly true. I mean, the rookie of the year has always been voted on. It has always been a set of guidelines, I guess you will, of how to consider it. And it is not just the fastest rookie, and it's not the highest place rookie. If it was just the highest place, you wouldn't need a voting for it. It's that simple. It's the rookie who... performs the best, the rookie who shows the best spirit personally on and off the track during the month. There are a number of other criteria that go into it as well. So it's not so simple as just the highest performing rookie or the fastest rookie. And certainly in 2017 with Fernando Alonso and a lot of people have voted for Ed Jones, I am fortunate enough to have a rookie of the year ballot myself. And, I did vote for Alonso that month. My justification being really that Alonso, there was unbearable and unrelenting scrutiny on him through the entire month. Never did he go anywhere without it just seemed like dozens and dozens, if not hundreds or more, people watching his every move. Fernando never put one foot wrong all month. He qualified in the fast nine. He was fast in practice. He was fast in the race. He led the race, really had a viable shot, as good as anyone else, of winning that race, and ended up falling out through no fault of his own. I mean, he blown Honda engine. I mean, there's nothing Alonso could have done in that. That's not to say Ed Jones wasn't a worthy candidate either, because I think you, with Rookie of the Year, again, because it's voted on, and every voter can kind of vote a little bit on a scale, if you will, I think a lot of people expected Fernando Alonso to do well simply for the fact that he was in an Andretti Autosport car. And Andretti Autosport has shown time and again that they understand how to get around the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. So it wasn't totally surprising. You take a driver of Alonso's caliber and you put him in a car of an Andretti caliber, sure, you're going to have a very strong entry. Ed Jones, on the other hand, was a very green rookie, if you will, not a whole lot of experience, certainly on ovals. He had run the year before in Indy Lights for Carlin, I think.
Yep.
Had then come and run the full IndyCar season in 2017 with Dale Coyne Racing, who we've seen over the years is good, is fast, but isn't necessarily someone that you're going to put in the top tier for winning the 500. Lo and behold, Ed Jones finds himself, I think he finished third, very good month, never really did anything wrong. But in my view, and this is strictly my personal view, I didn't think Ed Jones did enough over the course of the month to warrant my final vote for Rookie of the Year. He ended up third in the race, but I didn't feel like he had run a spectacular race. Hadn't really done anything spectacular through the month, and didn't have the crushing, what's the word that I'm looking for? The attention put on him that Alonso had to deal with. So if Ed Jones would have won the Rookie of the Year balloting, I would certainly not have thought that Alonso was ripped off. I would have thought that Ed Jones would have been a very worthy winner of that award, and then it came down to a very close vote from me, or I should say a very close vote for me to make. But I did give it to Alonso in the end, just because I thought his overall month was more impressive than Ed Jones.
All right, so this year we are going to see Pato O'Ward, Oliver Askew, and I'm drawing a blank now. Rinus VK, which I think has got to be one of the strongest Rookie of the Year classes that we've seen in a long time at the Speedway.
I think these guys have really, really shown some good skills in the Indy Lights over the last couple of years. Oliver Askew, really, I was really impressed with what I've seen from him early in the season. How strong is Arrow McLaren going to bounce back this year? They really kind of struggled last year, so that'll be interesting to see how they do this year with two very young drivers in those cars with Oliver Askew and Pato O'Ward. Not a whole lot of experience on that team, but both of those guys have shown to be very, very fast, and you know that Arrow McLaren has the engineering chops to get that done as well. Rinus VK, he's a little bit of a wild card. I honestly don't know what to expect from VK. You know, Ed Carpenter Racing, they've shown very well over the years on ovals. You know, Ed Carpenter doesn't need to prove himself to anyone on the ovals, and anyone will remember what Joseph Newgarden did at Iowa in an Ed Carpenter car back in 2016, where he just absolutely laid the smack down on the field. I think he set an IndyCar record of most laps led in a single race at like 281 or something like that.
I remember being the same for that one.
Those guys know how to run ovals. They had some good runs on road courses as well. I recall Mike Conway winning at Long Beach for that team, I think, back in 2014. Mm-hmm. So it can be done. They've done it. But I honestly don't have a good feel of how VK is going to perform season long with that team. But I think it is going to be exciting to see. Absolutely.
All right, next week, we're going to continue this indie theme with, I think it's going to be interesting talking about teams that we don't normally see in IndyCar coming in. So like your Kenny Bernsteins and some even some lifelong Indy Lights teams coming in. So that'll be, I think, a lot of fun. Paul, thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week. A little bit of a homework project for you.
Always a good time. Boy, Kenny, I'll just preview that by saying Kenny Bernstein owned one of the most beautiful cars I have ever had the joy of watching. That was Roberto Guerrero's pole-winning car back in 92. That Quaker State Buick Lola, oof, I love that car.
Oh, I love it. One of my favorites as well. One of the best paint schemes. Paul, thanks for joining us. You can catch Paul Dalby at fieldof33.com. I'm Jeremy Scott. Next week, along with Paul and Charlie Antio, driver analyst, Art Garner from Black Noon, and the I'm losing my mind here, Indy 500 Memories book is going to join us. We're going to talk about both books and more on the Indianapolis 500. So until then, take care, everybody.